first blockbuster in the history of cinema in 1902. And it's possible that, at least in part, it's been seen by more people in the world than just about any other film. Well, tonight you'll have a chance to see the complete color version of Georges Méliès' masterpiece, A Trip to the Moon, for the first time in over 100 years. And that you can see it in color at all is thanks to Serge Bromberg, the artistic force behind Lobster Films. A Trip to the Moon will be screened at the Museum of Modern Art at 7 o'clock tonight, along with the world premiere of Mr. Bromberg's documentary, The Extraordinary Voyage, which is about the restoration. It's all part of MoMA's To Save and Project series, and I'm delighted to welcome Serge back to our show to tell us about this exciting event. Hi.
Bonjour.
For those who've never heard of A Trip to the Moon or don't realize that they've seen at least one frame of it, probably, could you explain what it's about and why it's significant?
Very few people have seen that film, but we all have seen one image, the moon with a rocket in the eye. Actually, very few people know that that image comes from a film that was made in 1902, which is 6 years after cinema was invented. So we're in the very early days of cinema. Cinema, of course, is silent and black and white. And the film is actually the first worldwide success. It's really a blockbuster. I mean, he sold more than 100 prints, which would seem ridiculous today, but at that time it was huge. It was also the longest
film. Well, there weren't that many theaters to show these.
There were no theaters at all. The film is also the first film that was stolen in the history of cinema, of piracy. It was the longest film ever, 15 minutes. Which, of course, is short, but at that time it was long. And a complete show was made of very short films, about five or six, and the show would last about 30 minutes. So that film was an amazing event and a surprise success.
In France or around the world?
Around the world, mostly because Lubin and Edison stole the film, made a pirate negative, and sold the films in the U.S. without Méliès getting a dime from that those screenings. But the surprising thing is, of course, that the version you're going to see tonight is a version in color. And how is it possible that 6 years after cinema was invented, at a time where only black and white film existed, 25 years before the first color films, there would be a print of that wonderful film in color? That's all that's magic.
Well, there are a lot of things that are different about this film. It mixes real people with animation.
Not really animation. It's hand painting. It's sets that are lavishly constructed, but that, I mean, Méliès at that time, he was the inventor of special effects. All he had was a camera, a small wooden box, with the only special effects being backwards and onwards, and that's all he could do. But because he was a magician to begin with, before the days of cinema, he had all these crazy ideas. How could I do trick special effect films? And that's why he's the most famous in the history of cinema. Méliès is the inventor of special effects.
So we have a black and white version, and there was also a color version.
Well, actually, there was only a black and white version. The film was shot on black and white and printed on black and white film. But in those days, Méliès had the idea to offer the hand coloring of its film. If you were rich enough, you could pay three times the price of the film in black and white, and for that amount, you would get the film in color. And how do you change a film from black and white to color? It's very easy. You take a small brush and you hand paint frame by frame, every single frame for every color.
Now, they did that throughout the history of early silent film. Sometimes they would tint a scene blue so that we'd know that it was nighttime.
But we're talking about something much more laborious than that.
Oh,
yeah. It's basically, I mean, every single detail of the image has its own color. So we're speaking of a painting. Each frame is a painting, and we have 13,700 frames that are masterpieces in themselves.
Luckily, it's only 15 minutes long. But then the color version disappeared.
Yeah, it disappeared. Well, actually, you know, the film could never have existed in color, and there was no evidence that it ever existed. It was not even offered in color in the original catalogs. And we had no expectations of finding a color print. In 1993, an anonymous donor went to Barcelona Archive in Spain and donated 150 cans of film of the very early days of cinema, and among those cans, one was The Trip to the Moon in Color. So that's the good news. There was a print. The bad news is that the print was totally decomposed. The films do not last forever, and that one was back to dust.
Because it's silver nitrate.
It is silver nitrate. It's nitrate base, and it melts, and after a certain time, it just goes.
Did you have... How much did you actually have? Was it all dust?
Well, it was actually, the film was not really dust. It was in one block. You know, everything was, you couldn't unwind it. It was a complete block of material that was gone. And the head of the archive went to all the film labs he could think of, and they all said, you know, you cannot turn back a hamburger into a cow. So that film was dead. And in 1999, because we had a film in the Lobster collection from a director who was born in Barcelona, we made an exchange with them, and they took our film, and in exchange they gave us the remains of the color print, and it was in 1999. That was the beginning of a long struggle.
Well, the restorer called it a kind of a hockey puck.
A hockey puck. You could mention a very big hockey puck, but that's how it looked like. Yeah.
So how did you unreel it?
Well, for 2 years, we had no idea how we could do this. We had to try many strategies. And finally, we opted for the idea of actually destroying the film a little more by putting it in some chemical vapors that would destroy the film by making it melt even more until it dies. But in the process of melting, we knew that at some point that hockey puck would like open a bit, and we would be able to extract little details of some images. You know, all we wanted was to have at least one key image per scene, so we would know the colors for each character.
Because then you could go back to one of the black and white prints
and try to
colorize it.
Yes,
and computers can do that now.
Computers can do that, but at our big surprise, it took 2 years to actually melt the whole film. And we had a small camera by the original print, and every time a little piece would peel off, we would put it, film it with our digital camera, and eventually we ended up having 95% of the original film that was there. In so many pieces, it was like a jigsaw puzzle, but it was there.
But you couldn't put it together and make a print. You had to use it as a source.
Yeah, and in 2002, 2003, it's the Stone Age of film restoration. So we had to wait for quite a while. And in 2010, two foundations, Technicolor and Groupe Magan, were French foundations dedicated to film heritage, helped us, and we made a partnership and took all those datas, sent them to a big post-production house, and started repairing frame by frame on the digital machines, using actually the same techniques we use for special effects today.
My guest is Serge Bromberg, the artistic force behind Lobster Films, and he's responsible for the restoration of the color version of the Georges Méliès masterpiece, A Trip to the Moon, which will be shown at the Museum of Modern Art tonight at 7 p.m., along with the world premiere of Serge and Eric Lange's documentary about the restoration.
Which explains all this, how it happened.
Well, we're doing it in the radio version. They'll be able to actually see it tonight.
Absolutely.
When they go there. So you've unspooled it, or done as the best you can.
Yeah.
And then I'm surprised it's only recent technology that's allowed you to do this sort of thing, because we've been seeing some pretty incredible restorations over the last 20 years,
yes,
haven't we?
Yes, the problem is here.
Including some from you.
Yes, but the problem is that the pieces were not torn. You know, it was not one frame here, one frame there. It was a piece of frame here, another piece of frame there, some decomposition. We had to go to black and white material, extra material, for about 8 to 9% of the rest of the film. So it was such a sophisticated and complex process. It took about 1 year on the most expensive machines you could think of.
Do we know what kind of music was played with it?
No, that's a clue. Méliès did not require any music to be played, but we know also that in all the places where the film was shown, there was someone, a barker or a pianist or some kind of music accompaniment. So we had this idea of asking the French group Air, you know, we did the music for Virgin Suicides and many, many others, we commissioned a score from them, which is a new view on a film of 1902. What would Méliès do today if he had to commission a score? He would probably not commission the same kind of score they used in 1902.
Well, so he would have gone to Ravel then, or Debussy.
Ravel, yeah, well, you know, 1902, we're pre-Ravel, pre-Debussy. I mean, Gershwin is not around. And obviously, we decided to go to move a bit forward and put new music for a new audience on that film of the past.
Now, how many films did Georges Méliès make during his career?
Méliès made about 520 films.
Wow.
Which is a lot. But unfortunately, you know, he started his career in 1996 and ended in 1913. And for 10 years, he did nothing. And then one day, in 1923, he had to move out from his house. And before they tore down the house, he took all his films, his negatives, 520 negatives, and burned them. So basically, in one afternoon, that man, who had been the champion of cinema for more than 10 years, destroyed his entire filmography.
Do we know why? Did he feel that he had been passed by history?
Probably. He was probably very depressed. He was very poor. Obviously, he was a man of before the World War, you know, where today that's Veterans Day. In 1923, we're already 5 or 6 years after World War I. He's a man from an old age and...
How did That's he compare it. To other filmmakers of the time, like the Lumière brothers?
Well, the Lumière brothers would film reality as it was. Méliès was an inventor. He was also a magician before cinema arrived. And actually, Méliès was known to tell story. He was a storyteller. Louis Lumière says that he invented the machines to record cinema, but Méliès actually invented cinema storytelling, which in a way is true. And in another way, when you see those films where you're facing the stage and always filming the characters from the same angle, it's like between theater and cinema.
Although that all changed throughout the course of the history of silent film, which you've been a champion of for a long time.
Obviously.
Can you explain their appeal to you? Didn't some film buffs lament the switch over to sound in the late 1920s because they felt that the artistry would be lost?
Well, you know, in the silent days, when you had to mention to the audience that the sound had happened, you needed to show people surprised, amazed. You needed to visualize everything, including the sound. When sound arrived, the microphones had to be hidden in places. The actors were only dedicated to speaking in the mic. And in a way, it killed an art in itself. It's clear that René Clair and a lot of others had that feeling that cinema was gone. And to tell you the truth, in the mid-30s, 5 years after sound arrived, that's the reason for which all the archives throughout the world, MoMA, Library of Congress, Cinémathèque Française, appeared. It was to save the silent films where nobody else was interested in keeping those films.
Well, this film showed up by surprise. Do you think there are still other discoveries out there? I remember a few years ago talking about a film that had been discovered, I think, in some archive in Australia that nobody expected the film to be in.
Upstream by John Ford. Yes, there will be a lot of films found in archives and in non-archives, but it's true.
Well, it could be in basements.
It could be in attics and basements. And I mean, if people who listen to us have films in their attics and basements, go to a film archive and bring them your films, because there may be the last remaining examples of those productions.
Well, so many films have disappeared.
About 70%.
A Holy Grail?
Well, the Holy Grail was the trip to the moon in color. So we found that Holy Grail. So when people ask me, what is your best discovery? My answer today is, well, the next one. You know, I'm so optimistic. I know that tomorrow we'll find something that will surprise us.
What's the most unusual place that you have found a really great film in?
One of the most unusual places is under the roofs of the churches. Because, you know, when the people who own films wanted to keep them and not destroy them, they needed room. Where do you put films? And the roof of the church
That's
is...
That's weird.
Yeah.
Are you working on another one?
I'm working on the Charlie Chaplin 1915 and 1916 films at this moment, and a few others.
Serge Bromberg is the artistic force behind Lobster Films. They've just restored A Trip to the Moon, the color version, George Melies' masterpiece, will be shown tonight at the Museum of Modern Art at 7 p.m., along with the world premiere of Serge Bromberg's and Eric Lange's documentary about the restoration called The Extraordinary Voyage. It's part of the To Save and Project, the 9th MoMA International Festival of Film Preservation. And for ticket information, go to our show page at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.